Yes, we're on WhiteRabbitRadio.net here, and we are talking. This is Horace the Venger, of course, talking with Truck Roy of the Riding Shotgun fame. And we're going to be talking to him over the next hour, hour and a half or so, about all kinds of things, practical politics, and anything else that comes to mind. You there, Truck?
I am, and, you know, practical politics is what I love about the Follow the White Rabbit broadcast. I like the other stuff, too, but it's what really, really intrigues me, and it's kind of one of those things that once you dig into it, it goes a long, long ways.
Yes, absolutely. We have another Follow the White Rabbit ready to come out on practical politics, but we're going to actually, we've actually held off because I have good news. They actually have spliced together. You might remember that Stormfront conference in Tennessee.
Right.
They've spliced together the video, and we should be able to separate the video of the Bugs particular part, Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar, where me, you, and Bob Whitaker talked. It's about a two-hour segment, and we should be able to splice it and salvage it into an MP3. And so we're going to be working on that, putting that up hopefully in the next week or so first. So that should be interesting as soon as I get my hands on that. So that's good news.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, one of the things that I'm learning about this, and I use this stuff every day, is that if you ask for something and you repeatedly ask for it, you can actually get it. That's the power of sound. And that's something for a very literal-minded person like myself to – it's tough for me to get my head around. But it is so true. You know, I'm starting to see everything in a different light now. I happened to be reading this article in my local newspaper a couple of days ago. It was actually a letter into the newspaper called The Fall of Christianity. And, this is an article that's roughly, I guess, about Christianity. But as I read it, I read two great examples of subversion. And, I wouldn't have seen that 6 months ago, a year ago, if I hadn't been listening to your show. But if you don't mind here, I'll read you. These are two great examples of subversion here.
Knock yourself out.
Okay, here we go. This is talking about the early Christian time during the Roman Empire here. And I'm reading a quote from this guy, Will Durant, in his book Caesar and Christ, page 652. "The blood of the martyrs," said Tertullian, is seed. There is no greater drama in human record than the sight of a few Christians scorned or opposed by the succession of emperors, bearing all their trials with fierce tenacity, multiplying quietly, building order while their enemies generated chaos, fighting the sword with the word. Now, that was something that clicked in my head, you know, thinking about the word, the power of the sound. Brutality with hope, and at last defeating the strongest state in the history had known. Caesar and Christ had met in an arena, and Christ had won. First example of Christianity, subversion in Christianity. Christianity subverting the Roman Empire. And then it goes down there towards the end. I'm going to skip the middle part here, but it's talking about how it went back the other way. And it talks about Constantine converting the state to Christianity, and it says, "At this time there was an unwritten contract made between the state and church, and if put in writing it would read thus. The state offers many privileges to the church. Your pastors will not have to go to war. Your property will not be taxed. You are free to express yourself in any way you desire, even against the state. The only requirement the state asks of you, the church, is that when we, the state, gets in trouble, you have to defend ourselves in war, and we have to defend ourselves in war, you have to send us your young men without qualifications or hesitation. Prior to 313, no Christian was allowed in the army, and if a soldier converted to Christianity, he was dismissed from the army. In 313, the church and the state, the world, began to walk together, and there was no apparent difference between the two. Caesar and Christ had met, and Caesar had won." And that, to me, you know, if I'd read that, that wouldn't have caught my attention 6 months ago. But you have two great classic historical examples, one of Christianity subverting the Roman Empire. The more they tried to kill them, their words overcame. And then at the end there, you have an example of the state subverting that religion itself by taking it on, you know, it basically gutting it from the inside out and basically hijacking it.
Well, That's true. That's an interesting example, and we could go into that probably extensively. We're going to have many listeners that hear that, and they're going to want to say, well, that's not an example of practical politics. That's an example of this, or an example of that, or examples of who's controlling Rome. But the point Truck Roy's trying to make is that, you know, many times we believe that our enemy controls everything because they control the media. And that is, I used to think that. That is amateur. Amateurs think that. And amateurs always get it half right, the easy half. Our enemy controls everything because a segment of our enemy has been able to control the message. Everything comes down to controlling the message. I could give the average listener control of the major media, and you would lose it very quickly because you don't know how to control the message.
That's right.
That's what he's talking about. The early Christians were able to do is control the message within Rome, or those that wanted the Christians to control the message within Rome. Our enemy at the Stormfront Conference, one example I gave at the Stormfront Conference that I think woke up a lot of people, at least by the emails I'm getting, and that's what I'm going to address in the next file of the White Rabbit. I would like to play the Stormfront Conference MP3 first, of course, is about the nine words, the famous nine words that only a handful of neoconservatives and like-minded Jews mostly got the ball going on. Only a handful, but it only takes a handful if you own the major media. And that's this particular nine-worded meme, Ahmadinejad is going to wipe Israel off the map. Now, of course, many listeners immediately want to start yelling, that's a lie, and you're right. He didn't exactly say that. Other listeners are going to say, well, it's not that simple. Well, actually, it is. It is that simple. All they did was repeat that meme until it became ingrained in a population, so much so that you could walk out of your front door right now and you could get into fights that Ahmadinejad didn't say that. You could say Ahmadinejad didn't actually say that and present them evidence, but it doesn't matter. You'll get into fights at your local churches and whatnot. It is so far gone. They've set up the greatest war we're probably ever going to see, simply with a nine-worded mistruth. So much so that it's no even point in arguing that it's a lie. But if you repeat something often enough, and you do so with a large enough media platform, you're going to control the message, and you're going to dominate. And that's what we've seen from our enemy in regarding this particular instance. Ahmadinejad is going to wipe Israel off the map. They're always reducing things down to very simple memes. That can be easily duplicated, easily replicated. And then, of course, the lie becomes the truth. Now, we don't look to do that with lies. We look to do it with truths, like anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white. I'm often asked, too, Truck, from the actual conference, why it's so important for dissidents or the white and normal people who just want to defend themselves, why it's so important to have something simple to say. And let me explain it like this. Our enemy knows these tactics quite well. The anti-white elements that called themselves anti-racist, when they got going, all their seminars back in the 60s, back in the late 50s, especially in the 70s, 80s, even now, what they'll do is they'll guilt trip, go over all this historical mumbo-jumbo and lies, spend an hour guilt tripping a bunch of white people, and then they'll say, you know, if you catch anyone acting impolite or saying bad words about black rabbits or not loving diversity, all you do is call them racist, you know. And they'll give you very simple things to do that are very duplicatable. Now, does most of the audience do that? No. Most of the audience might be guilt tripped. Most of the audience isn't going to scream racism. In fact, if you look back, there's only probably one in any area code of the United States, or even in a country like Germany, there's only a handful in any given area, even over a large area, that are actually going to call the authorities when they see a flyer that's offensive or a flyer that says something politically incorrect, let's say. And this happens all the time. It only takes a one in any particular area. But everything pivots around giving that person something to do, empowering that person. We look to do that by having one particular person in a group defend themselves. You're just saying that because I'm white. Anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white. You know, when you're called a racist, that's what you're supposed to say. And it is important. If a dissident, a pro-white dissident, does not learn to do simple things like that, all you do is leave an audience despondent, with nothing to do, overwhelmed with information, good information, quality educational material. We've got all kinds of great books, but you have no way to empower them, and it actually leaves them worse off than when you first visited.
Right.
Because they have nothing to do.
Right, right. And, you know, what we're giving people is something to say, and that is something to do. A lot of times people think that saying words is not doing something. It's actually doing the most powerful thing. You know, that first example I used there, you know, they could kill Christians, but as long as they couldn't silence them before they killed them, that religion kept multiplying. You know, I'm starting to see religions, political states, media empires as vehicles. You know, they're vehicles. And you know, once you have the right words, you can go into any of those vehicles, any one of them. You know, preferably pick the most powerful one. And it's like, you know, if you're ever driving along in a semi truck, which I used to do a lot, and you're tuning into a radio station that's kind of fading in and out, and there's another radio station overlapping it. Sometimes the other radio station's signal will, you know, you come over a hill and that signal comes stronger, and all of a sudden it just overrides the station and you're hearing country music instead of rock and roll or something. Well, with the right tunes, you can actually turn up the volume and override the message of any given vehicle, be it a political vehicle, be it a religious vehicle, be it a media vehicle. And now you've essentially seized control of that vehicle. You know, it's like what you were talking about a little while ago, the Iranians or somebody seized control of that drone that the U.S. had flying.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
And they just overrode that signal, you know, took it over and got it to do something else. And, you know, all these different seemingly insurmountable establishment vehicles, be it the media or politics or religion, you can take control of these things with the right message.
Right, we have a dominant media on the internet. No one can doubt that. It just takes a lot more than 6 neocons to get out the message. It's going to take about 300 on the swarm, which will probably end up being double that number that aren't reporting, and one in every area code. And we're moving into position to do that. And once you start seeing that, you're going to start seeing it everywhere, and it's just going to overwhelm the system. The system can't handle its own contradiction. And that's where we're going with this. But, you know, that's another conversation. People say, well, we don't have enough media power. You have all kinds of media power. 2 and a half years ago, most of you have never heard of White Rabbit Radio. The idea of me being invited to speak at a Stormfront conference is absurd. It's all because of the power of your media. But this is the big but. It's very important for every listener to understand. We could own Fox News. If we're not using Fox News to control the message, we lose. We cannot win, even if you own the media, unless you learn how to control the message. To control the message, you have to have a message. Our enemy always has lies. We only have the truth. Reduced down to simple memes to fight this particular system right now. But owning the media is not enough. You could have dominance online. You could have such a dominant media that someone like me could come on the scene, no one's even heard my voice, all of a sudden end up at a Stormfront meeting in 2 years, and have a very fast-growing website, if you look at just Alexa ratings. It's just simply putting out a podcast. It's not because of what I'm doing. It's not because of WhiteRabbitRadio.net necessarily. It's because you have a dominant force online. But you can have that if you're not utilizing that vis-a-vis by controlling the message or have a message. You're not going anywhere, ever. It doesn't matter whether it's the neocons in Fox News, and it doesn't matter whether it's pro-white dissidents online. You have to have some type of message, period.
Right, and our message is fighting white genocide.
Sure.
And there's a great mantra behind that, but fighting white genocide, 3 words there, that is our job, and that's who we are, that's what we do. I was talking on the Don and Derek Black show a few years ago, and I have all the respect for Don Black in the world, but we were talking about Amarin and the fellow who runs it. And, you know, I said, do you know, what's that fellow's name who runs Amarin?
Jared Taylor.
I said, you know, Don, because he's
talking about American Renaissance.
American Renaissance.
Amarin.com.
Yeah. And he's a kind of intellectual type.
Right.
He's a professor or whatever. But, you know, for some reason we were talking about what he said. And I said, if you asked Jared Taylor what his conference is about, would he say it's about fighting white genocide? And Don Black said, well, no, I think he'd say, you know, he's a race realist. And I use that term too, race realist. Well, let me tell you something. And I kind of came over the top and I said, well, when people hear race realist, they think Nazi, which that may not be accurate. But the truth of it is, race realist is a title that you can put on yourself. That's a definition you can put on yourself. That's static and boring and, you know, I mean.
Our world is simplified. It's like Bob said at the conference, if you can't breathe, you got to have air. And right now, our world consists of pro-whites and anti-whites, white rabbits and pink rabbits. We create a very stark line. And so there are no race realists on Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar. They're just pro-whites, and they're fighting anti-whites. But we get too complicated into trying to come up with this ism or that ism.
Right.
What ism should I call it? You're just pro-white.
Well, let me put it,
stuff doesn't give you power. That stuff just divides and takes away.
Yes, let me give you an example. Okay, let's say that I am somebody's trying to stalk and kill me. They're trying to murder me, okay? Does that mean that I am a murder realist? You know, no.
It's a waste of a conversation to even have here.
Right. See, I am a human being. I'm a white and normal human being that has many interests in life. But right now, I am under threat of genocide. That doesn't define who I am. If I could remove that threat, I would have many other things that I would do with my life. Okay. That's, you know, race is not what I would base my life on if somebody wasn't trying to wipe me out.
There is an element of the pro-white dissident community that just wants to be accepted by the conservative establishment and that type of thing. And they are accepted behind the scenes. They're very similar to the Soviet dissidents who just want to be accepted. And to do that, they're constantly redefining themselves or trying to get around these words like Nazi. We confront things head on. I confront the symbolism with White Rabbit Radio head on. That's the only way you're going to go. You're not going to be able to dance around with terms and all kinds of fancy talk about conservation and all kinds of stuff like that. You're either pro-white or you're pro-white genocide. You've got to start getting stark. And anyone that says different, and start disarming their language. They're worried about getting associated with Nazis. Well, anyone white and normal with an opinion is a Nazi who wants to kill 6 million Jews. It doesn't matter whether it's O'Reilly or someone else. And the more times you say it, the more you disarm it. Not only that,
you know, when you say I am fighting white genocide, you're not putting a label on yourself. You're saying an action. It's not static. It's not saying I am this. It's saying I am doing this, which is much different because we're not.
You don't have to define what pro-white is. What they'll ask you is what's a white country. And, of course, you can say that. Or they'll say, what is a classic question I'll get?
Well,
find a white country, and I'll just say I don't have to. General Wesley Clark did that for me when he said there is no room for ethnically pure states in Europe as he went around bombing Serbia on behalf of NATO as the head of NATO. We don't have to define white countries. Our enemy has done that for us. Of course, they're not saying there's no room for an ethnically pure state, or Wesley Clark didn't say there's no room for an ethnically pure state in Africa or Asia or anywhere else. He's saying this to white countries and only white countries and standing in a white country at the time. So we don't really have to define white countries. Our enemy has done that for him. We shouldn't define things our enemy has done for us. But when you start going into this, we're race realists, we're this ism, we're that ism, then you got to define that. Then the enemy's going to start asking you questions, and then it's going to be a bunch of dissident hoopla over this ism or that definition or this stuff. It's too complicated. The average person can't, the average pro-white dissident can go into that complicated strategy, but the average person listening can't do it. Our enemy understands a lot more about human nature than the average pro-white dissident. They keep things simple. They give everyone, they might guilt trip and do all kinds of fancy dancing and revisionist history on the anti-white stage. But when push comes to shove, they give people simple words to yell when they're offended, like, well, you're a racist. You know, simple things. And that's what works.
Right, right. Because, and going back to that, you know, what's a white country? Well, I think Bob Whitaker said it well when he says a white country is any country where there's been massive non-white immigration being forced into it. You know, I mean, nobody's trying to do this in Africa. Nobody's trying to do this in Asia. Nobody's saying, hey, you need more diversity in Japan. You know, nobody, yes. That wouldn't fly there.
Right, right, of course. But when you start talking about defining this, defining that, we should never define something our enemy has done for us. Our enemy's given us layup after layup after layup. proving that they're anti-white, proving that they want genocide. I mean, they're not really trying to create a blended humanity anywhere but white countries. They're just not putting their minds to it. They're not putting much effort into it. When it comes to white countries, they go all out. So there's no point in wiggling around trying to define ourselves to make sure we're not getting called Nazis, because anyone white and normal with opinion on race, and Bill O'Reilly is far from National Socialist, but they call him a Nazi all the time. So it's overplayed. You just gotta stick to your guns and have a confrontational strategy, because that's what they're doing. If we sit and not understand that you're not in a debate club, you're not in a debate club where the Marquis of Queensberry is making some rules or something like that. You're in a war, and the war is psychological warfare, where they are screaming terms and you've got to disarm it, where they are using propaganda, but the propaganda is all grouped around a handful of associations. Associations to make you feel guilty, associations to shut you down, to shut you up. What we're overcoming is those associations. We're not looking to fight with some fancy argument. We're looking to fight fire with either fire or fire extinguishers, which is psychological warfare itself.
Right, and also, you know, when somebody's coming at you, and that's what's happening, we're entirely, you know, this is not a battle that we sought out, but when somebody's trying to genocide you, obviously you can't sit back on your heels and build moats and walls around yourself and hope to defend yourself. What you have to do is parry that thrust and then go right back at them and accuse them of promoting white genocide.
Yeah, when the average white person is called racist, they have to have something to say. If you're not giving them some, if a person cannot defend themselves, basically, at the most basic sense, or someone on that playground, some little white kid on that playground can't step up and defend his group racially, you're in trouble.
Right.
That's where it all begins. Our enemy didn't exactly hold guns to our heads. They used psychological warfare. They won everything and didn't fire a shot because we didn't have effective strategies to bring it down. When they brought down the Berlin Wall, the old Bob Whitakers and whatnot helped bring down the Berlin Wall. They weren't exactly making fancy arguments about Marxism or why Marxism doesn't work. They were simply pointing out an objective truth over and over again. If the Soviet Union's a worker paradise, why does it have to have guards with machine gun at the borders to keep people in? If the Soviet Union is such a worker's paradise, why do you have to have walls to keep people from leaving? They would ask the simple contradiction that's right in front of everyone's face over and over again, and sooner or later the thing just imploded, and it was quite soon. And they were doing simple memes that were very easily duplicated to the average person that wanted to do it.
Right, and in our modern era, what we're faced with is a race problem that seems to exist in every white country, but not in any non-white country. And so, I mean, you don't have to get much deeper than that. You know, if you
it's flooding Africa with non-Africans and saying, you know what, we's all the same here. Because we're all the same here, you're going to get, we're going to flood you with non-Africans and give you affirmative action, special rights and privileges. Oh, free health care and...
Well, I mean, if you went into all black communities or all black nations and you said, there's a race problem here, there's obviously a race problem here, and the solution to it is to flood you guys with overwhelming numbers of non-blacks and then assimilate you into that non-black population, I don't think that would fly. And you just have to point out that hypocrisy and that contradiction, and most anyone, whether they're teachers or anybody else, is going to shut up real quick.
Yeah, our enemy likes to square us as the pro-whites against the world. We don't do that. We don't play that game, because in reality, the world doesn't have any power over us. Who has power over us are the whites in charge, or those that pretend to be white, what I call the pink rabbit. We created a whole new dynamic between the pro-white and the most vicious group, the white anti-whites, the white anti-white will always try to create the dynamic against us, against the world. Well, the planet's full of nothing but a bunch of majorities. There's a handful of big populations too, the Africans and the Asians, but they once you divide them up, they don't really get along. So, the Chinese don't necessarily get along with all the Japanese and Koreans and everything else. So, really, you're dealing with a bunch of minorities on the planet, and we're fighting to lead one minority, the white rabbits, to freedom. But to do that, we actually have to fight the white anti-whites, who, whether Jew or Gentile, they're always the one cooking up the rules. They're always the one appointing Obama or putting Obama into office, which I think was their craziest ideal.
Or their smartest, depending on who actually did it.
Well, depends. Yeah, it's right. But, you know, typically they appoint these white anti-whites like John McCain, they get into office and they just kill us. Obama makes everything racial overnight simply because he's a mulatto, but so it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, you know, I lean towards your theory that Obama is not really our enemy. I think a good rule of thumb is that our enemy always looks like us but has no loyalty to us.
Well, that's true. Obama can't – what he means is Obama can't get away with anything. If, for instance, if the Justice Department was led by Hillary Clinton, she'd be getting away with all this stuff too, and it wouldn't get near as much press. But everyone gets upset because the Justice Department is led by this radical black radical who just hates whites, and he's so his seething hatred for whites is so overwhelming that they go so over the top with this stuff that it gets all the whites' attention, and that's what's wonderful about it. It's kind of like, it's just so obvious. They're so obviously anti-white, but of course, who's made them that way? Whites, white anti-whites, the Jewish elites and whatnot. But it becomes rather fascinating. But everything has to be reduced down to these memes, so that you can play the dreaded strategy that they played with the Ahmadinejad is going to wipe Israel off the map. It's called the broken record strategy. It's simple. If you have something that works, you keep repeating it. We at pro-white dissidents always try to look for a perfect strategy of perfection. Well, there's no such thing as perfect advertising. The only rule is something considered optimal, and something is considered optimal is if it works. If it works, you do it until you're in power and it doesn't work, or you do it until your sales start going down and you have to go to something new. Most of you will never know who wrote the meme "Drink Coca-Cola." You just know who ended up using it.
Well, yeah, and you know, if you look back through history, when the left was really powerful in the 1960s and stuff, and the anti-whites were really getting going, you know, before they had actually
they took over the universities, yeah,
yeah, and the political establishment and everything else. And you know, the one thing that sticks in my mind about watching videos of their rallies and everything is them repeating things over and over again.
Oh my God, they do the broken record strategy. That's why the neoconservatives, a lot of people think that all the Jews are cohesive. They're not. A lot of Jews hate the neoconservatives, or they're jealous of their power. They have a great deal of power. The reason they have power is because they come out of the far left and they're so good at the broken record strategy. Oh, they lie incessantly, but they are very good at the broken record strategy. The Charles Krautheimers will see that Ahmadinejad is going to wipe Israel off the map. He will see it over and over again in every one of his articles until it's just dripping into the public consciousness. And they have the media platform where only two or three or six or seven or less than a dozen can do that. We don't have the media platform, but online we could do that with several. We could do that with a handful, maybe a few hundred. We're already seeing the power of how our platform can be used. It just takes a little more numbers.
Well, you know what?
That's where the real power. The mistake that we make as pro-white dissidents is that we don't understand that good advertising costs a whole lot more than books.
Well, yeah, I mean, you have to have the right message, and I don't have to be smart enough to come up with that right message. It's already been done for me. But what I can do is repeat it incessantly. You know, you were going back to when you were talking about getting some of that audio from that Stormfront conference there. I don't know what all is going to be on there, but between some of the speakers, we would go up there, you or I, and we would have the audience repeat things back to us. You know, I had the audience repeat back to me several times, our enemy looks like us but has no loyalty to us.
Yeah, and for listeners, Truck Roy was walking up. He was walking up in between the speakers and getting the audience riled up and making them repeat things. It was kind of interesting.
It was, because you could tell a lot of people were a little put off by or didn't expect that.
Dr. David Duke didn't like it at first. Then he got into it. He understand what Truck Roy was doing. What Truck Roy was getting an audience that is the antithesis of a dissident. It doesn't matter whether it's the Soviet dissidents or the pro-white dissidents. Do not like to repeat something or write something someone else has written. It's just against their nature. That's why they're dissidents. So having this group repeat something like, you're just saying that because I'm white, anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white. It was pretty difficult to do at first, but it was kind of entertaining.
Well, it was, but, you know, people caught on to it real quick, and I remember the first time I did it, right afterwards, Sam Dixon came up, very good speaker, and he said, you know, that reminded me of being in church. And you know, when you think of the powerful thing, you know, powerful elements of religion and stuff, you know, take any religion you want to pick all over the world, and you will find its followers repeating a prayer over and over and over again, asking for something over and over again. Yeah, or you know, if you find leftists in the 60s demanding something over and over and over again, or if you find Ronald Reagan saying, "Gorbachev, tear down this wall," and that echoes and is repeated over and over again, the power of asking for something, not just once and not quietly, but loudly, over and over and over again, and this is completely hard for a literal-minded person like myself to understand, but actually doing that can make it happen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no doubt about it. It changes the whole dynamics. No different than a good advertising will make you, even the most academic-minded, high IQ individual, you can't get around the good advertisement that'll make you pull over just to try Sonic Sweet Tea for the first time or something. That's why advertising works. That was my whole point before. And of course, they're not going to stop playing a good advertising just because they played it once or five times or anything like that. They're going to stop playing it when it no longer makes the sales. Our enemy will never stop using the word racist until it's used against them, until it starts hurting them, kind of like we're doing over at Bugs. That's WhitakerOnline.org. We're using this stuff. They played this broken record so many times. They've got so much power off of it that they're ripe to be nailed. They're ripe for the radical reversal. And that's always done. Unfortunately, for us, we've got to go through the same steps that they went through. That's to have a message, to put it to the broken record, to repeat it enough, to start ingraining it into the consciousness all over the place. It's just a lot of legwork. And then you come to a state when you start imposing terminology, and imposing terminology is a very, very critical step for subversion. It's a very critical step to take back our society. Our enemy imposed terminology as soon as you start saying, "I'm not a racist, but," well, that's their word. You're never going to be able to explain why you're not racist, because racism only exists in white countries and all white countries, and only white people can be racist. Our enemy right now is starting to, over and over again online, we've seen this successfully over the last 6 months, 7 months, 8 months, and it's starting slowly but surely to start trying to prove that they're not anti-white. They'll never be able to do that, because they are always arguing from a position that always puts us in a world without any white people.
Right.
It's not possible for them to prove they're not anti-white. They don't understand that yet. That is why the mantra works. I'm always asked, why does the mantra work? Well, it's not perfect. It just works. We only look for something that, in other words, you can go outside and you can use this stuff. The average 7-year-old in Germany can use it and not go to jail. It doesn't matter if you're in the UK. It doesn't matter if you're a 90-year-old guy sitting in Tennessee. You can use this stuff and it works. It's duplicatable. That's all we're looking for. We're not looking for something perfect, because we won't find it. We are looking for something that works, and we're looking for something that can be put to the broken record, say it over and over again, to basically help us, to basically control the message. That's where everything goes to. But the important critical step is imposing terminology, and it is an aggressive act.
When you say anti-racist, it's just a code word for anti-white. You've done multiple things at once. You've basically done a judo move. You've thrown the enemy's invective against the wall, and then you've stuck it right back at their throat. And you know, it's, you can't say it enough times. You can whisper it, you can shout it, but you know, these talking points, you repeat them over and over and over again. One of the things I said at that conference is that thousands of years ago, our ancestors already knew this. This is not new technology. They were known as spells back then. Talking points and spells are the same thing. If you say something over and over and over again, it will become true. And so
that's why the elections, I mean, some of the most the last election, we saw all the different mantras surrounding Obama. Oh, yes, we can. And that one's been around quite a while. That is an old communist mantra, actually. But you know, the groups that invent those get paid lots of money to bring those out, and they're very simple. They can be repeated. Once you get a meme established in a society, they are impossible to root out. The only thing we have going for us is that our enemies, a whole entire system, is based on deception and lies. Every meme they ever put out is always a lie. In fact, every program the liberals have ever put in place always fails. We have that going for us. Everything we do is actually stating an objective truth that can be proven by anyone. That's, they'll scratch their head for a while and then look at it and then say, okay, you know, that's the way it works to the average person. The average anti-white will sit there and argue their head off, but that's where they get in trouble. They're just too programmed to do anything but.
Yeah, one of the advantages of having truth on your side is you don't have to memorize as much. You know, your anti-white has to memorize a whole religion of bullshit, basically. What we have to do is just point out a simple truth over and over and over again. If you just point out that only white countries are expected to take in massive numbers of non-whites, well, that's something that everybody can see, anybody that's traveled. You know, in my community here, it's mostly all white. Well, they want to build, they want to bring diversity programs in. They had diversity march. So nobody goes to South Texas where the communities are almost entirely Mexican and say, you know what, it's too damn Mexican here. You guys need some diversity.
This is one of the ways the anti-whites put us against the world. They'll try to say that they'll try to keep the debate between whites and Mexicans. I always flip it back around. I always say it's not a Mexican problem. No one's flooding Mexico with non-Mexicans and giving them affirmative action, special rights and privileges, and trying to create a blended humanity in only Mexico. Only white countries are doing this. Only white kids are affected by this. Only white elites support this. It's genocide. I've got listeners that do this in Germany. You know, in Germany, they tried to make sure everything's a Turkish problem, but it's not a Turkish problem because no one's flooding Turkey with non-Turks. That's simply what we're looking at is simply a cause and effect. They bring in all these immigrants and then try to project this ethnic conflict model. We want to keep the conflict between the white rabbits and the pink rabbits because that's where the power resides. That's where the true power. They'll keep you fighting the Mexicans, the Turks. Hell, they'll try to bring in little green men from another world to have you fight them and to try to force some integration that direction. They don't really they're not picky on who they bring in, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, going back to the example of a frequency, you know, if you've got a drone airplane or a remote control airplane, you know, if you're trying to take over the signal on that and you're on the wrong frequency, you're never going to do it no matter how powerful your signal is or anything. You know, if you're fighting Mexicans or blacks, you're never going to win that battle because Mexicans or blacks aren't oppressing you. It's the your own people that or people that look like you. They may not be your own people, but people that look like you at the top of society who are after you. And once you tune in on them, once you zone in on them, now you're on the right frequency. You just turn up the volume, override them, and you can take control.
Our enemy wants us. Our enemy wants us to fight everyone but them because they know they can't fight us. That's always what they do. They want to perpetuate these ethnic conflicts and keep the battle in the street. We want the battle over sound, air, and ether. We want the battle online. We want the battle ultimately over the airwaves. And we want to fight fire with fire. We want to fight their memes with ours, and we can do that over and over again. They don't want that. They want to start debating multiculturalism. They want to debate, the means. We're only talking about the ends, genocide. You can sit here and debate multiculturalism and the exact history of multiculturalism, what professor brought it out and how dangerous it is and how it destroys societies, but it's only destroying Western societies.
Right. And basically, I mean, what you're trying to do is shout down your opponent. As simple as that is, if you're in a shouting contest and somebody's yelling their talking points at you and you're saying, you're just saying that because I'm white, anti-racist is a code word for anti-white, and you're fighting white genocide, and you're repeating these things over and over again, don't expect them to quit right off the bat. But what you're doing is you're testing, it's a test of wills. Is your will strong enough to outlast your enemy? Is your will strong enough to outshout your enemy? And, of course, we've got a huge benefit because right now, as you say, the time is right. It's that time on the calendar. We've got a lot of things going for us, and this message is multiplying and spreading throughout the Internet, throughout all over. You know, I'm reading things in blogs and newspapers that people are starting to say anti-racist is just a code word for anti-white.
Sooner or later it'll go top down. Someone at the top will say it, and all hell will break loose, and the person at the top might not even know where they got it from. Bob's blog is well-watched. We've got some very aggressive growing websites that do nothing but promote consistent messages revolving around, well, mine is white rabbit genocide, mine is an allegory, a little bit off the top to talk to this particular audience. I want my audience to take this message primetime like they took 9/11 Truth Pride primetime, because I got the greatest conspiracy going, and it's so great because no one talks about it.
Yeah, and
it's so obvious. It's the worst run conspiracy ever, I always say.
Well, you've
got some very, very aggressive things going on with advertising, and we will keep pushing down that road as hard and as fast as we can.
One of the points you made early in one of your earlier shows that really hit home with me was the idea that people have a tendency to follow a script. If you put a script out there, people will follow it, whether it's an apocalyptic Christian script that, you know, you're going to have some sort of a final war in the Middle East or something like that.
Every religion and mythology has apocalyptic scripts with a final battle between good and evil. Yeah.
Right. Sure. And you get, you know, if people have read that script and enough of them have read it, reality will tend to follow that. So one of the reasons that hit home with me is I happened to read Wired magazine several years ago, and they had a couple of Jewish magicians on there by the name of Penn and Teller. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but they were working
out in Las Vegas, I believe.
Yeah, and I think they've done some television stuff too. In fact, I know they've done one of the sickest movies I've ever seen, which was called The Aristocrats. If anybody has any doubt of how Jewish Hollywood feels about the rest of the world, watch the movie The Aristocrats. That is one of the most weirdest, perverted, it's kind of a rite of passage for Jewish comedians. I won't go into detail, but if you're interested, watch The Aristocrats. But Penn and Teller, in this article with Wired magazine, were actually talking about the psychology behind magic. And they were actually doing a study with MIT, because in their magic act that they do in Las Vegas, they show the audience how they're going to do the trick before they do it. And yet they've shown that the trick is just as effective, if not more so, because the audience has been prepped. And so this is a psychological trick that a lot of our enemy will use. They will tell you what they're going to do before they do it.
Oh, absolutely. Of course. That is, you always have to state your intentions. You always have to be up front. We're very up front. With White Rabbit Radio, I have an agenda to put you on a consistent message, to get out a message down this particular avenue of alternative news and research. You've got to be up front with that if you want to be effective.
Right.
I think our enemy, by the way, I think our enemy has always been up front.
Oh, entirely. I mean, if you go to the movie The Matrix and they talk about humanity being a plague or you know, something that spreads like a cancer and it needs to be eradicated, they're not beating around the bush.
Or you watch the neocons on Fox News saying we're going to have to attack Ahmadinejad. It's not like they're lying.
Yeah, or if you hear the environmentalists say that we have unsustainable population levels and we need to get sustainable population. They're not beating around the bush. They're telling you that you don't matter to them, and your existence is actually a pain in the butt for them. So by the same token, of course, when we do our talking points, we're putting out there what we're about too, which is fighting white genocide. Another issue on that is when you're putting out there what you're going to do. We're the rabbits of plenty. I mean, basically, we break every bottleneck. And there's a topic that you've talked about very recently, genetics, that is very, very interesting to me, because I believe this is the next big control point. You know, you had Hollywood media, or the television and music, television and movie industry. Then you had the internet, which Facebook and Google, you know, these guys are taking big advantage of that. But the next one is genetics. And to show how the spirit of our opposite sides can result in different results, I want you to think about it like this. As Horace often points out, our enemy works through scarcity and conflict. And so if they get a hold of just next-level genetic technology before anybody else, they will choke it down. They will hold it onto
for
themselves.
They always do this stuff. They always keep things for themselves and don't want anyone else to have it. They want us to live. This is the reason they hate our race so much, is because they can create a slave pen anywhere but white countries. We're always taking sand and making it into silicone. Our enemy by nature does conflict and scarcity. We by nature, we aren't really conflict-oriented at all. We might get on a field and joust. Knights might get on a field and joust, but we're not conflict-oriented at all, and we do abundance. We feed planets.
Right, so let me give you an example of how that might work. Suppose that we get a hold of this genetic technology first and make it available to the world. So in other words, anybody in any country across the world can decide what genetics they want their child to have. They can
It depends. You're not going to have, probably not going to have genetics your parents didn't have, but what they want, of course, and Bob has talked about this very subject matter, what they want to do is squelch designer babies. They don't want designer babies. On the other hand, it's coming down the pipeline very quickly where you're going to be able to pick what genes your children have, what genes they don't have, what, you know, if they have a disease, get rid of the disease, or if they have some kind of genetic condition, or if you want them to have blonde hair and it's in the ancestry, bring it out, that type of thing. They're trying to limit everything, much the same as if the listeners go back and look at Nikola Tesla, which is well over 100 years ago, you're going to come across something very fascinating that he came up with that was squelched. They don't want, we do abundance. Nikola Tesla is a great example of this. We don't do scarcity. Our enemy loves to design stuff around scarcity. They like this closed-in systems, like all whites can be racist and only whites can be racist. You see how it's a closed system? The reason the mantra works is it allows us to break out of the closed system by pointing out that it is a closed system.
Yeah, like I think of Wikipedia as a perfect example. You know, we get a hold of something like the internet and we'll make a Wikipedia. We'll make all the world's information available to anyone who wants to get a hold of it. If they get a hold of that technology first, they will leech as much system as information as they can from the technology and hoard it for themselves.
Right, they will try to shape it. They will try to exclude you from being able to revise it. They will try to charge a barrier. There will become a barrier to entry. I'll give you a great example of how they operate. And this is almost cosmic. They do it on all levels. You used to be able to buy unlimited internet on your cellular phone. Now they're starting to ration it. They always operate this way. They always start their rationing stuff. Right now, I bet you the vast majority of listeners that pay a utility bill in America, in the UK, in Europe, in Australia, and I know because I've asked this question among listeners that actually sent in different examples. You're going to get energy bills, and the energy bills are going to start telling you how much more or less energy you're using compared to your neighbors, how wasteful you are. Some type of, light bulb guilt tripping, I call it. They're trying to set up their next system that's based on scarcity. They want to say, oh, free energy, and then, of course, start, just like the internet, just start rationing everything. That's how they operate. It's almost a sickness they have. Our race, cosmically, is the polar opposite. We do abundance. We don't do scarcity. And that's why they hate us. We do sand in the silicone.
We could do this with anything. I mean, we can do this with healthcare. We can make the best healthcare available to anybody who wants it. If we're given the right environment to continue down our natural path, we can do this with information. We can do this with energy. We can do this with land. I mean, we can go to other planets. It is unlimited what we can do as long as we're operating on our natural frequency.
Absolutely. If you're fighting white rabbit genocide, I always say you're fighting an enemy on a cosmic level. It doesn't matter how you think about it. Some people are on a consistent message. Some bugsers and whatnot are on a consistent message simply because they want something to say. Others want to fight an enemy on a cosmic level. Others just want to win. Everyone's got their own motivations, but and that's fine. That's totally fine. As long as you want to fight, that's fine with me. I don't care how you go about wanting to do it.
Well, and I'm always trying to look ahead. And one of the reasons why this idea of the spirit behind what we're doing appeals to me is because I've talked to people, intelligent people, who are like, say, big fans of Ray Kurzweil and his singularity concept and things like that. And when you talk about race to them, they say, well, race is not really that important because pretty soon we're going to be transcending biology.
But the only people that actually think that way are white people.
Right, but it still matters.
The Kurzweil themselves do not think that way.
Well, I don't know. Perhaps you're probably right on, but what I'm saying is whatever new technology comes down the line, even if we transcend our biology, the spirit remains. The same people who will genocide all our people, if they get a hold of that technology, they will continue to do evil. They will continue to run scarcity and conflict.
Sure.
You know, I mean, no matter what happens, no matter what technology changes the world, the game remains the same. It is still a struggle against good and good versus evil. It doesn't matter whether it's on the racial level. It doesn't matter where it is. Now, racial level is the big fight in front of us right now. We are under threat of genocide. But even in a even if we transcended our biology, the fight would still be the same. Do you want those people who would take away the future of white children, who would blend you out of existence through assimilation, in control of a whole new level of technology? No.
Well, they do have, in my mind, they do have technology, but I think they've been trumped. I think their new world order and everything has been trumped. I got a podcast devoted to it. But the question is recognizing the differences. We know all about, we know quite a bit, or at least most people think they know quite a bit about our enemy. We don't really know about enough about our natural tendencies or what is different about us. They want you fighting on their terms. We have to fight them on our terms. And they want to do what they do best, and they want to keep everything restricted to what they do best. And we can do what we do best in a bigger, better way because they need us. We don't need them.
And not only that, our spirit, our natural culture, our, you know, the natural way we are leads to endless possibilities. Their natural spirit is a closed, like you said, closed in system that leads to a dead end.
They always put themselves, it doesn't matter whether it's for private central banking, it's a dead end street they put themselves above.
In fact, they would have.
When you look at the, you know, only whites can be racist and all whites can be racist. The Jews always put themselves, and I'm using them as an example in this, Team Jew Rabbit is the premier dominant front group in white rabbit genocide when it comes to in the public charge of things, as far as running Hollywood and whatnot, obviously. But they are always putting themselves above the fray. They're not white, except now, of course, they're becoming white again. And they're always creating these closed-in systems and taking themselves out of the box. The private central banks do the same thing. It's a closed-in system. It's a rigged scheme, and they take themselves out of the box. They don't want any competition and things like that. But their systems, like the Soviet Union, another closed-in system, a workers' paradise that had to have walls and guards with machine guns to keep people from leaving, they're susceptible to their own contradictions.
Yes.
They're not susceptible in the way most people think. Most people think that they can be bombed into submission or something like that. No.
No, and you know, they would have destroyed themselves long ago if it weren't for the fact that they lose. If they ever won, if they were able to completely and totally create a closed-in system, they would take themselves down with everyone else. Right?
That's why the topic of a new world order is so important. I used to think it was black helicopter type stuff, and a lot of it's true. If not all of it's true. They have strategies for gaining power. They don't have strategies for keeping power. They always lose power. And you know, in In-Game Exotica is a pay-per-view podcast, although you can get all kinds of it for free under Candy Carriage, just those listeners. We've continued the topic of alternative news and research as well as geopolitics from Follow the White Rabbit. And Follow the White Rabbit is, of course, all practical politics. That's why me and Truck Royer are talking about practical politics. But, you know, we continue this topic of geopolitics and alternative news and research. And one of the things that fascinates me is our enemy's ancient history. I know pretty well their modern history because we all read Dr. Kevin McDonald's and the Dr. David Duke's Jewish Supremacism and all the other fine literature on their modern. But what I'm interested in is their ancient links, their ancient genealogy, what they're up to. And this New World Order deal is, you know, it just comes down to they do not have a strategy to hold on to power. And that's why they got to rule the world.
Right. And you know, a lot of times when our people look back at the last few centuries or few decades, they often say, well, the enemy has been winning a victory after victory. Not really. If they really ever won a total victory, they would have destroyed themselves along with us.
They destroy countries. They move to another country, and their different groups consolidate power in the country they left.
Right, but the fact that we have actually survived and triumphed over them decade after decade is the only reason that all of us are still here to fight and talk about this today.
Well, some would argue that the reason we survive is because they got to have us to parasite off us. Others say that, and that's true of the Western elites in general. I mean, who else are you going to parasite off of? Who else can deliver the goods? There's a whole nother version that we've survived simply because, things always fall apart for them, basically. When it starts coming into the end game, things start falling apart for them. They get too greedy. They go over the top. And in fact, I think right now they're getting ready to go over top in a way the whole planet's going to get a front row seat on, with this war business. But, that's basically the way that goes. In my opinion, of course.
Well, I largely agree with that. And, you know, also, it's not just the Jews, as you've pointed out. You can kind of tell the uniform. You can kind of tell what team people are playing for by their tactics.
We spread it down into pro-white and anti-white on Bugs for the alternative news and research listeners especially, and especially those racialists that don't know. There's a lot of interesting stuff coming about our enemy that goes back into our ancient history. You know, our race, white rabbits, we're spread out across this planet once before, and for some reason genocided. We know this for a fact now. I was just on the David Duke Show on Rents.com, Rents Radio, and we were talking about the evidence that suggests Stone Age hunters from Europe discovered America. There are all kinds of anomalies of Aryans, white rabbits, as I call them, Caucasians, Indo-European, let's say. That's what they are under international law, spread out around the world, and for some reason they were killed off and browned out. One or the other or both. I believe it's probably both. Right now, of course, what we see is something quite fascinating. What we see are white rabbits. Our race is spread out all over the world. We don't have a home, and there's an attempt from the people in charge of us to wipe us out through either immigration, assimilation, or just letting people kill, rape, and murder, which I think is rather fascinating. And one of the things I go into, been going into more and more, is our enemies linked through their ancient priest class and whatnot, the type of things that are coming out down the public avenue, like, I don't know if you've heard that, Truck Roy, me go into the Cohen priest class. They've identified the Y chromosome, the actual male origination, the first male Y chromosome Cohen that existed 3,300 years ago. That's the type of thing that interests me, because that just happens to coincide with another character that any of you watched Ancient Aliens and whatnot always ends up on there. His name's, because he's so strange, his name is Akhenaten. Very interesting conversation. But when you talk about our enemy, I divide it up in two groups, the banksters and the elitesters. And the big difference is this Y chromosome business between their priest class and whatnot. And that's only contained in the male lines, but that has come out just lately, and most of the racialists, most of the pro-white elements haven't even picked up on that. That's big. And, of course, Akhenaten is quite famous because they just happened to find his kid's loot, King Tut.
Right. And, you know, this stuff is very, very important in the big scheme of things. That's why they spend the money to research that.
The significance of Akhenaten and King Tut is the shepherd kings that descend from them. The shepherd kings that eventually came to power in Egypt after them, they had some agreement with a group called the Hyksos. And these two came together, and then the shepherd kings would rule Egypt for 300 years. After Akhenaten got kicked out, the shepherd kings came back into power. They descend from these particular guys, and the shepherd kings succeeded in creating a blended humanity in only Egypt.
Sounds a little familiar.
That sound familiar? They brought African slaves. They brought in all these slave elements. They started slavery in Africa. They were one of the origins of it, as far as multiracial slavery. And then they created a blended humanity in Africa and in Egypt, and that's why we have Egyptian now. Looks like they do. But it's a fascinating discussion simply because, and this is the important thing that I want listeners to know, King Tut, of course, historically to the pro-white elements, King Tut, the debate was whether over he was Indo-European or not. The debate over Akhenaten was whether or not he was over Indo-European or African. I think it's a very interesting discussion. It's come out that he's Indo-European, at least partially. The problem is, of course, that they have different skulls. They have an extra bone in their skull. There's something very peculiar about them genetically. And, of course, Akhenaten is a Bolshevik. He flipped Egypt upside down completely, instituted monotheism. Cut a deal with a radical element from the outside of Egypt called the Hyksos. It's a very interesting overlap into our enemy's ancient history. And we just happen to be spread out around the planet and killed, too. So I just think it's just fascinating stuff. It's all coming together on one big puzzle. Who this enemy is, and of course, the first question I always get asked in White Rabbit Radio is, why are they doing this? And if you go to my About page, I redid the About page. It's very extensive now. And it is rather exotic for people to look like us, maybe even some with blonde hair, blue eyes, and to be so committed to our death. Because I'm sorry, the average Norwegian isn't committed to our death. They understand what's going on.
Right.
And it becomes an exotic discussion.
It is. And, you know, my question is just a survival or tactical. You know, if I'm trying to take control of a vehicle, if I'm trying to get in an organization and put them on message, how do I tell who's who? And I think the solution to that, because you can't do it just by looks.
You know, well, actually, what's funny about this, you see, in fighting White Rabbit Genocide, we don't have to worry about all that. Because what the reason for the whys really don't mean anything to me. Pro-white, anti-white, pink rabbit, white rabbit, the whys don't mean anything to me. That'll be solved in the end. It's just the things that I have to talk about to attract the alternative news and research crowd, because that's what they want to know about. That's what they're watching. They want to know why King Tut had an extended cranial void, why Akhenaten had an extra, why these two had an extra bone in their skull, why they're Indo-European at the same time, why they did such radical things in Egypt, and why they're linked to all, let's say, modern individuals in modern Western civilization.
At the top.
Yeah, exactly. There's a big why here. We have a group that looks like us that have no loyalty to us. I go into another metaphor as well that I do quite successfully. I call it werewolves and vampires. 15 years ago, I only studied werewolves. Werewolves are very aggressive. They're always aggressive. They will fight you to the death. When the full moon comes out, they got to have their pound of flesh. They got to have blood. I call the little Jew rabbits the werewolves. But there's another part of the equation that's always sitting there. They don't control the media. No, they just smile and sit in their castles while we're being raped and murdered. They didn't do the Bolshevik Revolution. They didn't start and fund the Bolshevik Revolution. They just gave it their stamp of approval. But there's another element always sitting there, and they're probably the most dangerous element, in my opinion, historically for our race. But they came back into power in Egypt. They didn't come back into power with a sword. The Hyksos failed at that. They came back into power through a priest class by actually controlling the message. That's what they did.
Hey, being on the right frequency is everything, man.
If you control the message, you control everything.
No doubt. And again, our message is fight white genocide. And all you have to do is repeat it over and over again and turn up the volume and point out the hypocrisies in your society and in your world. Nobody's trying to flood African nations with hundreds of millions of non-Africans because of some race problem, as you see in every white country. I've got to wrap it up, man. I'm about out of time here.
One last word. If any of you are interested in any of those particular topics, Horus Avengers Follow the White Rabbit, the free podcast, goes into all those topics. And after about 72 or so on, we're going into all, after about 70, we go into all practical politics. But you can get candy carrots online for free. And that goes into this stuff and deeper and deeper, talking about modern evidence, talking about certain memes in the media, and talking about our enemy in very, very stark genetic terms. That if that interests you, that's the road it goes down.
It interests me, man. That's why I tune in like every other day or whenever you put a podcast out.
Well, that's why it's there. It's there for the audience. But by all means, doesn't matter why you want to fight, fight.
That's right. And you know, when you have the right message, man, it takes away all the fear. I mean, I literally, you know, I've been involved in racial stuff for a while, and I always was hesitant about saying stuff because I didn't want to offend people and everything like that. But, you know, now I can completely see I'm against genocide. And you know, who's not against genocide, right?
That's exactly right. Action kills fear, but you got to, you know, not everyone is good at having something to say or knowing what to say. The pro-white dissidents are very good at weaving stuff, at making arguments and doing presentations, but the average person is not. And they have to have something simple to say, and when they can do that, action will kill fear. And it always starts as some type of verbal self-defense. Always, always. And it always has to be something duplicatable, like, in your opinion, I'm a racist. You're just saying that because I'm white. Anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white.
That's right. That's right. Verbally dominate. Well, I got a roll, man. I got to go out and do some things. And
that's okay. Keep trucking.
You bet, man. Good talking to you, and I'll be listening for your next podcast.
Will do. Will do. They'll be up.
All right. Talk to you later.
This is WhiteRabbitRadio.net.